Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Craig Crash Collins. Joining me this time, it is not B. Scott. We told you in the last one that he is off covering the College World Series for the NCAA. So in his spot today, you know him from a lot of other times and filling in, Chris Simmons of the MCT Podcast. Chris, how you doing? How are things going over the MCT Podcast?
Oh man, things are great. I know we just eclipsed the 20 show milestone, if you will. So, you know, glad to notch that one on the belt loop as well. So it's been a lot of fun. I mean, obviously, it's a dream come true. It, generally speaking, just getting a chance to shoot the breeze with two of my closest buddies talking sports once a week. It's something I get to look forward to throughout the week. And you know, and it's great to see it kind of coming into fruition and building upon it, and just feel like we're getting better and better each week. You know, it's almost been a long enough time where I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of curious to go back and watch like our first episode and just see kind of how it would sound compared to now. But I mean, and we've been blessed with a lot of fun things to talk about too. As you know, in the last 20 weeks of the sports world, has been a lot of fun from a lot of different venues. I mean, hell, the NBA playoffs have been one of the most fun runs. You know, if you don't have an objective team in this run, like, you know, we're Pacers fans and things like that, like you can't not love this run of playoffs. And if you have a problem with this run, because there's no LeBron or Steph or even Kevin Durant in it, then I think you're more part of the problem than the solution. It's a way better field right now than what we've seen in years past. This one is one
for the diehard fan. Because it's not, you know, the casual fan, like, oh, we get, because that's what I think, like, especially the NBA is one of its biggest problems is that, like, the sport is well run overall, but it caters so much just the casual fan of like it basically is like the 1950s way of looking at it, where it's like the only way that you're going to get noticed is if you go to a big market, because that's where all the cameras are. It's like, no, I'm pretty sure that they have like TV stations in Milwaukee. Like you can go there and still, you know, build a super team there. They'll build a statue of you. You think they're going to build you a statue in LA where, you know, 50 other players have been there before? No, you're going to.
Nope.
They're going to make a statue of you if you come to Milwaukee or Orlando, or whatever.
Yeah, think about the simple fact. I know we'll keep, this will be the last one, but think about the simple fact that like LeBron, right, went to LA, won a title in LA. He's not going to get a statue down there. They're going to forget him. They're going to forget him in 10, 15 years, his Laker career, at least.
Right.
He's not going to be known for what he did in LA. He's going to be known for winning one in Cleveland, building the first super team in Miami and winning two. And then like, oh yeah, I guess he did win that fourth one in LA. Hell, it'll probably be a Jeopardy question 20 years from now. It'd be like, this superstar won three titles between Miami and Cleveland. Where did he win his fourth? Or, you know, so it'll be some weird trivia question like, oh yeah, that's right, it was the Lakers. So those big markets, just like everything else, they have their pros and cons. But yeah, it's absolutely a run for the diehard fans and not the casuals. And it's a breath of fresh air for sure.
Well, I'm very grateful for what you guys have been doing at the MCT Podcast, because it's been holding down the fort for B. Scott and I while we've had kind of our little hiatus here. You know, thank you guys for doing what you guys do. But I'm glad that you brought up LeBron, because that kind of segues us into something we're going to talk about here. Because as you know, we took our 2-week hiatus, and B. Scott, like I said before, we were like, oh, hey, one of the reasons is, hey, there's not a whole lot going on in June. We're going to take a little bit of a break. Well, of course, like literally 2 days later, you know, the floodgates open with topics that we could talk about on the Crash Course Podcast, such as you've got Nate Bjorkgren getting fired, which, you know, we anticipated that. We're actually, you know, B. Scott and I are actually, you know, very glad to see him out the door. You know, Brad Stevens,
so over here.
Right.
We were,
Brad Stevens moved to a front office role with the Celtics. And Coach K announces his retirement with Duke. He's going to go for one more season with the Blue Devils. But that's where the whole LeBron thing segues us to, because, you know, I wanted to talk about Coach K, but like, there's not a whole lot to really, not that there's not a lot to talk about, but like, what are we going to say? Like, oh, Coach K was a great coach. All right. You know, like, there's not, I'm trying to think of like,
what are you going to say? What are you going to say that hasn't been said before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's,
so, I mean,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, first D1 men's coach with 1,000 wins, 5 national titles, 15 ACC titles. I mean, you know, but what got me thinking about, like, what could the segment idea be for Coach K is I was like, you know what? I've never really been a Duke fan, but if there's somebody on, you know, that's associated with Duke that I'm like, you know what? If Duke wins the national title, I'm at least glad that this person, you know, at least gets to have another ring. It's Coach K. So yeah. I was like, you know, what would be interesting is to go into who are the people on teams that we hate that we like, you know, who are the most loved people on teams that we just despise. And so I was looking, I wanted to, you know, try to stay as middle of the road as possible, as far as like, not just going off of teams that I specifically hate, but just like teams that I hate, but also like the general public does as well. So I went to the Bleacher Report. This is a list from 2012, and I make that specifically an issue because on this list is the East Germany swim team, which I don't know what they're doing in East Germany, but like, quit pissing people off. Like, just be a swim team. You don't have to be crazy.
I wonder if it's something tied specifically to the swim team, or just the fact that it's Germany, and Germany obviously has their history.
Maybe,
but I don't know. But I don't know, because why would you take that history out on specifically the swimming team? It's not right. Like it's not like you're like their soccer team can go, you know, burn in hell. It's not like that. It's the swim team was listed on there, so I don't know.
Put it this way to tie it all together. Carmel swim team, which, you know, Chris, you're a Carmel grad from, you know, Carmel High School here in Indiana. Their swim team has won like literally like 50 titles in a row, and I can guarantee you no one cared. Like, yeah. It's awesome. It's an incredible feat, but like no one outside of that community, you know, gives a look other than like
in the sense that no one cares enough to hate them for it.
Right. Right.
That's that's what you're saying. It's not the whatever, don't care. It doesn't have that hatred factor to it of right. Like, well, if I couldn't win it, at least this guy didn't win. And then they do, and you're just extra mad about the whole season.
Right.
You know, the whole thing. So I got you.
Right. So looking at that list, it's the Yankees, the Lakers, USC football, the Red Sox, Notre Dame football, Detroit Red Wings, East Germany swim team, the 49ers, University of Miami football, Duke rounds out the top 10. So yeah, I was like, I just wanted to make sure that like my list here wasn't just, you know, off the reservation and only teams that I hated. So I was like, I want to make sure I look at a list to make sure that it's not just like 100% just Craig crash bias. Like, oh, you know what? I hate IU, but I like this team. Or hey, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one. No, I'm the only one, but like Indiana is that's more specific to Indiana than it is anywhere else. So for me, here is my list. It's in no real particular order. But I've got Rob Gronkowski of the Patriots. You know what? I don't really like the Patriots, or obviously don't like the Patriots. Don't like Tom Brady really. But you know what, Rob Gronkowski, he's just a goofball. Mm. Like it's hard to hate Rob Gronkowski. You know, he was on The Masked Singer, which you and I are big fans of. It's hard to hate that guy. He's just, you know, a funny dude. I love the story that he told about like how, like, cause we all know the story of how he was almost traded to the Lions, but retired. And like, I've hearing him tell that story and just the laugh. You know, you can't hate Gronk. You know, after the Super Bowl loss, having his shirt off, you know, spiking beers, like he's just a dude. Then I've got Coach K at Duke. You know, it's one of those kind of like, because for a while, like for whatever reason, I think it's because like, you know, some of the teams, you know, when I was growing up, I was a Kobe fan and a Shaq fan more than anything else. And so like they went through the Spurs a lot. So I wasn't a big like Spurs fan, but as time went on, like I was like, you know what? I don't really like the Spurs, but I respect Greg Popovich. I respect Tim Duncan, you know, all those guys. That's how I feel about Duke. Like, I don't like Duke. There's nothing like charismatic about Coach K that I like, but when somebody is that good at what they do, it's hard to be like, I don't care if they like, no, I mean, you respect what they're able to do in the time period they're able to do it. And we like say like, hey, we've never seen this before. And we were, you know, honored to see what this person was able to do, you know, being able to get to 1,000 wins, being the first D1 men's coach. Like, that's pretty incredible. I was trying to think on the Yankees. I mean, the obvious one there is Derek Jeter. So I went kind of off the reservation. Mariano Rivera. You know, I'm a guy, you know, if you ever tune into an MLB The Show stream over twitch.tv/CraigCrash, you know that I'm a big, you know, fan of the pitching. Mariano Rivera, one of the best closers, you know, if not the best closer in baseball history. So, yeah, it's hard to hate him. He's a quiet dude. He just goes out there and shoves, you know, in the ninth inning and, you know, has, you know, basically and did it all throwing essentially one pitch. So there's really not a whole lot to hate there. And then, you know what? As much as he tormented me as a Cubs fan, Albert Pujols is on the list for me. I don't really hate him. I don't like, and I don't know if it's because like it's been 10 years. And so like, right. I've had time to like simmer a little bit. But like
time heals all wounds.
Exactly. But like I'm like, you know, I never really hated him when he was on the Cardinals, or don't remember being like, ah, oh, screw that guy. Like, of course he did.
Yeah.
I think more when I think of that kind of guy for the Cardinals, because I don't even really dislike Nolan Arenado or Paul Goldschmidt. But when I think of that guy, like I'd be like Randall Grichuk. Like I hate Randall Grichuk. Like he's not like a real commonly known name outside of baseball circles, but like if I'm going to name somebody that I hate from the Cardinals, like all time, I'm like freaking Randall Grichuk. Like, of course hits a, you know, we're up 5-0. He hits a, you know, bases empty 8-run grand slam to put the Cardinals up and extend their, you know, 1-game lead on the division to 7. And now all of a sudden we're, you know, under 500, even though we were 20 games over at the beginning of the game, like, whatever.
And we lost a draft pick, lost a first rounder. Like it's just all horrible. I'm surprised. Right. I'm not gonna lie, I'm surprised you didn't go Yachty. I'm surprised.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. That's a good one.
When I think of that Cardinals personified, like that person that just rubs me the wrong way, has forever, will net, like it's 100% Yachty. Yeah. And then then when you said Randall Grichuk, the name that popped up for me is Matt Carpenter, because he had that one stupid hot run and everybody anointed him the greatest thing that ever touched baseball.
Should have been
dirt.
MVP.
And I don't like his face. I just like everything.
Oh my God.
I just, it's those two for me are at the top of the list when you talk about Cardinals, but
those are good ones. Those are good ones with Yachty too. Cause Yachty, you know, a big proponent of the unwritten rules, yet throws a bat in the center field after a walk-off sack fly. I did respect him for a while before he just started being an absolute, like getting mad that, oh, how dare you call St. Louis boring? How dare Wilson Contreras say that he's the best? He's supposed to say he's the second best. How dare?
Yep, that's the one.
Like, just basically it's annoying. Rounding out the list for me is Justin Verlander on the Astros. Sure. You know, of all the Astros, I was a Justin Verlander fan. Like when he was on the Tigers, he was on my fantasy baseball team for a long time. I got to see Justin Verlander pitch in person. So I, when he made a rehab start, I can't say start for some reason. you know, he made a rehab start against the Indianapolis Indians. So I got to see him pitch for the Toledo Mudhead. So I like Justin Verlander. I'm glad he got a ring. Of course, the ring that he got is the tainted ring from the 2017 Astros. So if there's a player from the hated Astros that I can pick, I'm going with Justin Verlander.
Right. I see exactly where you're going with the logic behind that. That, yes, you know, the two things can be separated that way. We're like, yep, it's a tainted ring and I don't like it at all. But you know what? If a guy is going to get one finally, and it's I'm glad that it's this guy. So and Verlander
if it was like Kershaw. Like if it was Kershaw on the Astros, I'd be like, okay, fine, at least Kershaw's got a ring, whatever.
Yeah, and Verlander is absolutely that dude who deserves a ring from whatever. Man, you talk Verlander, and I don't mean to get us off course again, but like just it's crazy to think about the talent that Detroit has had over the last say 15 years come through. I know they haven't all been in their prime, you know, on the team at the same time. So it's hard to say like, oh, they should have won it all and been a dynasty. But like when you start listing the talent like pitching and offense that has come through there, it's crazy to be like, you're talking about those bottom feeding Detroit Tigers who win like 60 games a year, that those guys, because I mean, you're talking Verlander, Scherzer, Miguel Cabrera, Nick Castellanos. I mean, and that's just four off the top of my head.
Well, the pitching staff by itself, I mean, I know you and I have talked about just, you know, and the fact, you know, for the simple fact that we hang out because we live four houses away from each other. But like, you know, we've talked about the fact that the 2014 playoffs were like the Royals, the Tigers, and the Angels, three of the teams from the AL. But that 2014 Tiger, at least I think it's the 2014 Tigers team, is the one that had, I mean, pitching staff, like you said, Max Scherzer, they had Justin Verlander, they had Rick Porcello, they had David Price.
Yeah, exactly.
David Price. So they had all those guys. And then, yeah, they had Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder. They had Victor Martinez, who was solid at the time. So, like, they had Austin Jackson. They had prime talent. Like, yeah, I mean, we would be looking, if the Dodgers hadn't won the World Series last year, and let's say they'd never won a ring, like, that would be, like, basically, it'd be like if the Dodgers never won a ring. Not necessarily to the same extent, because, I mean, obviously, you know, the Tigers never added, like, Mookie Betts, but, like, at the same time, you know.
But they did have Triple Crown Miguel Cabrera, like, not that year, but, he was there, like, yeah.
He wasn't quite what he is now, where he, like, literally can't hit the baseball. So, I mean.
Right.
You know, so yeah, they had a team that very well should have won a World Series that didn't.
Yeah. And to be fair, I think it speaks more, not so like, I'm not trying to say like the Tigers bumbled all of that talent. I want to look at it more in the light of like, it just shows how hard it is to win in baseball.
Yeah.
Like that, it's way more about how hard it is to win a title in baseball and why we haven't had a back-to-back winner in forever. We haven't had a dynasty since the 90s with those Yankees. Like it's all about that and not saying like Detroit messed up but you know what, if I'm going to go, you know, I love this segment, by the way, the top, your five favorite players and coaches on hated teams. It's a fun way to think about it. So don't be surprised if you see me kind of bring this to the other guys. And we also talk about it this week.
Absolutely.
At least in a small segment, because I'm definitely curious who somebody like Tade, who's way out in left field anyway, and Michael, who's even further off the reservation.
He's going to talk about like some random like soccer coach Real Madrid. I hate Messi. I like this team, but I love Messi, whatever team Messi's on.
And Michael, I'm trying to think of like who's a universally just loved athlete, like Mike Trout. Michael would be like, I can't stand Mike Trout. And I'm like, whoa, like why are we doing this?
So
like,
not to do some, I mean, you could take that segment. I absolutely, you know, on air production talk right now, but also if you wanted to, you could even flip the argument of like, okay, now who's like a top, you know, who's from a team that's like very well loved, who's a player you hate? Like, you know, you can
do it
from that angle too.
Yeah. Okay. I
love the Colts, but I really hate, you know, Rodrigo Blankenship. Just kidding. I love Rodrigo Blankenship, but saying, you know,
right.
Exactly.
I got you. Okay. I like it. I like where your head's at. Always on the same wavelength with you. I love it. So my list real quick on my favorite players. So I'm definitely going to steal two of yours. Actually, I think three, but I got Gronk, because you just can't not love Gronk. Even if you're, you know, like we are not Patriots fans. We despise them, blah, blah, all that. Hate seeing them win. Hated seeing Tom Brady's smiling face every other year with a Super Bowl trophy in his hand. But Gronk made it at least palatable. Gronk makes it fun. And I think part of the reason, the more I think about it, I think part of the reason Gronk is so appealing is obviously, like, you can see from the first time you see him in an interview or in any kind of appearance, he has all the charisma in the world and all this charismatic, fun loving frat boy energy about him that is just so appealing. But I think what makes that so much fun is going to an organization like the Patriots, who are so opposite that, who are so clean cut and we do things the right way that they don't, and like all this and that, like you know they're so buttoned up that like they get that, it's like Wild Thing from Major League, where like you know it's such a perfect marriage because they're oil and water and it works. Like Gronk, I think Gronk would be so much fun regardless of where he went. But I actually think he's the most fun as a New England Patriot because of that, or the way that organization is. If he were to go be in Jacksonville and party it up and even and do things, people would still love him. But I don't think he would have, it would be the level that he's loved. Yeah. Now.
Yeah.
And then obviously Coach K, again, another dude, regardless of what you think about Duke and Duke basketball and how much you hate them and you can't stand to see them winning, at the end of the day, you have to tip your cap to the, you have to tip your hat to the coach, especially when you're talking about a collegiate program where the turnover theoretically is every 4 years, he has a brand new roster. So it's not like he rode the same core guys to these five titles and then didn't win anything for 20 years. But he still has his five titles. I mean, this is a dude that just year in and year out has been a thorn in the side of basketball and has won multiple times with all kinds of different talent and schemes and things. So you have to tip your hat off to him. And then I'm going to go with Chris Bosh of the Miami Heat, because again, that's just a dude who just, I just loved watching him play basketball. He was such a unicorn out there where, you know, he's this tall, lanky dude who doesn't look like he should be able to do the things he could do on a basketball court. And he was part of this. I mean, I think he's one of the last bit of that last generation coming now into this new generation of like these stretch four and these centers who can step outside and shoot and still play defense. He was probably one of the better ones to do both ends of actually playing tough nosed defense and still being able to hurt you on the offensive end from outside and pass the ball. I mean, and he was just so much fun on those Miami Heat teams that, you know, I couldn't stand as a Pacers fan because they always went through Indiana and always came out on top. Yeah. And I don't like D Wade and I don't like LeBron, even though I respect both of them and what they've done. I was going to say
that, like, the only one of those three that I really didn't like was LeBron. I didn't mind D Wade, okay, and I didn't mind Chris Bosh. But I was gonna say, hey, I mean, I was gonna say, don't you agree? But I mean, obviously you don't. But
D Wade, I don't know what, and I really, it's one of those things I can't pinpoint. I don't know what it is. I can't be like on this date at this time he did this. It's just something.
He knocked over my drink in Miami one time.
He was just cut me rude. Off
on the interstate.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't know what it is. He's just never rubbed me the right way. I just have never enjoyed watching it, or I don't know. It's just something that wasn't right, but it's not to the level of where like I dislike him. I just never found myself rooting for him and just kind of was like, oh, he won or whatever. Like, eh. But Chris Bosh always was just fun to watch. Super good dude. And I felt like he was just a good dude, even off the court, which is equally as important. And then I'm going to go Derek Jeter, because again, like you talk about that dynasty of the Yankees. When you talk about that dynasty, if I were to ask you what one player like personifies that dynasty, or what do you think of when I say 90s to early 2000s Yankees, as great as Mariano Rivera is, and I'll get to him, like Derek Jeter is the captain. Like he's the guy. So you got to respect him. And then Mariano Rivera is the last one, because again, I think everything that you said, I agree with. But I'll go a step further. I'll say he's the best closer to ever step on a baseball diamond. I have not seen a pitcher literally strike fear into an opposing lineup as much as Mariano Rivera did. I mean, it's to the point now where like in his career, you essentially, like, especially in his prime, like if you were down in the eighth inning, you knew the game was over. Like you knew you were seeing Mariano Rivera and you basically couldn't do anything about it. Like when your game plan is so keyed around, like, we just have to not see this dude. That's a level of respect, especially in baseball, that you just don't see. And then, yeah, to do it all with essentially one pitch is just unheard of. The fact that he would go up there, I mean, just with the biggest of balls, would go up there with a one-run lead in the bottom of the ninth and be like, I know what I'm going to do. You know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it anyway, and you're going to stand there and take it. It's just – it's just unfathomable to me. It's crazy. And then I do have a bonus player for you and I would say Dexter Fowler as a Cardinal, because it just hurts. it just hurts so much.
It doesn't hurt so much that the fact that like the Cardinals have been sort of like mediocre for the last few years. Like, right. had he gone to a Cardinals team that was like winning 100 games a season, like it would be like, no, yeah. no, don't.
Yeah,
do that.
That would, yeah, that would hurt a lot more. But it still definitely hurt not only to lose him from the Cubs just because he was, you know, the leadoff guy, he was the Yugo Wego guy. So any team we went to, it would hurt. But then to end up there, and then to even go further and to see how the Cardinals fans treated him when he wasn't playing well, just,
yeah,
you know, made you just want to reach out your arms and be like, come back to Chicago, like, we'll love you,
best
like,
I'll give you a hug.
I know, right? Woo! Jeez. But yep, okay, those are my guys. So you got, yeah, like I said, Gronk, Coach K, Bosch, Jeter, Rivera, and then the Dexter Fowler. So
yeah, all great picks. So yeah, definitely a fun exercise. Well, you know what? We are going to now talk about the college football playoff expansion. But before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our friends of the show.
Are you tired of your same old lunch hour of sitting and scrolling through your apps on your smartphone? Have you thought about playing a board game with your coworkers? Eat Lunch and Board Game is a podcast dedicated to telling you about board games that are great for lunchtime fun and some that are probably better saved for after work hours. I've been playing games at my office for over 4 years now, where I have made new friends and business connections that have been very useful. Board games build bridges.
All right, so before we get into more of the college football playoff stuff here, we do want to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at Crash Course FM. You could like us on Facebook, Crash Course Podcast. Go to the YouTube channel, 3C Media on YouTube. That's where you can not only catch this podcast every week, but our YouTube-exclusive podcast, the MCT Podcast, the far less superior version of the Crash Course. No, I'm just kidding. Chris, Michael and Tade all talk sports as well. They've been killing it, just over 20 episodes, like Chris said earlier. So that's really cool. It's kind of crazy to think, right after the Super Bowl, but still, it's wild to think about, 20 weeks. So yeah, every week, on the weekend, sometimes most of the time it's going to be on Saturday, sometimes on Sunday as well. And then remember, that you can also watch the show live every week, twitch.tv/3cmedia. And remember, you can hear it, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Podcast. So, one thing that, well, another kind of a little bit of news that broke while we were gone, that is actually very exciting. I did not expect this at all. And that is the talk of a possible college football playoff expansion. And while we thought, or at least I thought, the next iteration of the college football playoff would be kind of just to, like, all right, here you go. Here's more teams like you wanted. And it'd be like six or eight. Actually 12 teams, which is pretty crazy. College football of playoff management committee voted on Friday to present the concept to 11 university presidents and chancellors in the format on Tuesday. So that would be tomorrow if you're watching us live. It'll be today if you're listening to us on all those platforms I mentioned earlier, or YouTube. And so the way the format will work is that it will not include guarantees for conference champions, but it will feature the six highest ranked conference champions and the six highest ranked teams remaining, with no limits on conferences, because of course we got to jam as many SEC teams as possible. That was my fear when I first read no conference champion guaranteed and no limits on conferences. I was like, cool. So it's going to be the SEC Invitational,
and the Big Ten, but yeah.
Right. But I actually am coming, coming around on this whole idea. I love this idea because, well, first of all, if you were to look at this, if they were to have this conference or this playoff expansion last year, your conference champions that would have made the tournament would have been Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Cincinnati, Coastal Carolina. Your six at larges would have been Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Florida, Georgia, Iowa State, and Indiana. So if we split it up by, you know, where the semifinals were, you'd have the Rose Bowl region of Alabama and Notre Dame getting byes, then you can have number 5 Texas A&M against Coastal Carolina, the 12 seed, and then number 8 Cincinnati versus number 9 Georgia. So the way it worked last year was essentially the top 12 got it. And then the Sugar Bowl region would be number 2 Clemson, number 3 Ohio State with byes, number 6 Oklahoma versus number 11 Indiana, and number 7 Florida versus number 10 Iowa State. The earliest implementation wouldn't come until the 2023-2024 season. I would be shocked if it comes later than that, just because I feel like this is an immediate improvement on the current system and something that everyone's clamoring for. So I think they will do everything in their power to make sure that this happens as early as possible. I don't think it can happen until 2023 anyway, but I would be very shocked if it happens later than that, although there's a lot to agree on still. But yeah, when I surprisingly enough, when I look at this, I am very surprised and very happy with what I'm seeing from this 12-team format, because essentially what it's done, because one of the things that I, you know, one of the things that's caused me to like completely roll out a 12-team format is the fact that, like, well, you inherently have to have four teams on bye to make it work. And those teams will be, however soon you start the playoff, the teams that got the bye, so the better teams will have more of a layoff, will have, be more susceptible to rust, and can have that kind of automatic complaint of like, well, of course, this team that won their first round game beat us because they got one extra game to shake off the rust and have a, you know, and play a tough opponent. But, you know, I do this format has essentially made me forget about it, because initially, like I said, when I saw that conference champions weren't guaranteed, I was very worried. But I think the wording there is important, because with 12 teams and there being 10 actual conferences, group of five and power five, they need to specify that to make sure, hey, it's not 12 teams. All conference champions get in and two at larges. It's important to make that specification that like six conference champions and six at larges. And the big thing that makes me excited about this is that conference championship weekend will actually mean something again. Something I'm actually excited for is the fact that, like, okay, well, like, especially with like some of the lower, like if you're like, let's say you're, you know, Cincinnati and you're going into your game in the AAC conference championship game, you know that if you lose that game, then you're not going to be in the college football playoff anymore. You're playing for your right to be in. And the team, let's say, I think it would have been this past year, would have been the Pac-12 that would have been the next team in. Then you're thinking, okay, well, if they lose, we like you're watching the Pac-12 title game even more, you know, because you're like, okay, whoever wins this one is going into the college football playoff. So there's a lot more that goes on. Cause like this year you look at the conference championship weekend. Well, let's see. Alabama played Florida. Well, you knew Alabama wasn't going to not make the college football playoff. So at best, you knew that if Florida wins, it's going to be Florida and Alabama. Clemson and Notre Dame, you knew Clemson was going to be in automatically. It was just whether or not they were going to still let Notre Dame in if they lost. Ohio State was, you know, basically, I mean, that one mattered, because if Ohio State lost, they wouldn't have been in. But the other was lost the entire Big Ten. And pretty much the Big 12 championship game meant nothing, even though it featured like two top 15 teams. So like, you know, like, and that's what is wrong with the current college football playoff format. I've gotten to the point where I've thought like, man, was the BCS better? Because I feel like there were more of a variety of teams that you saw. I mean, think about the teams that we like, when we were younger, that were like at the top of the list in college football. Like, I know that like there's going to be turnover. Obviously, I know that like Nick Saban has, you know, really changed Alabama and made them into this incredible dynasty. But at the same time, like even other teams, like, you know, Texas isn't really anything anymore. West Virginia isn't really anything anymore. Miami of Florida hasn't been really relevant in a while. I mean, with the current college football playoff format, you have basically only one conference in a group of conferences we call the Power Five. So we say these are the best conferences in all of college football, yet only one of them actually, you could go into the season saying, well, whoever wins this division, whoever wins this conference is going to the college football playoff. Because if you're not Ohio State and you win the Big Ten, you're probably not going. If you win the ACC and you're not Clemson, you're not going. The Pac-12 is completely irrelevant. And the Big 12, if you're not Oklahoma, you're not. You're probably not going to go, because there's essentially five teams. And so that's what I'm really excited for, is that you can, you know, it's going to actually become more diverse. And I think that will spread the talent around. So like, hey, now instead of being like, all right, well, I'm going to ride the bench for four seasons so I can be the starting quarterback for 1 year at Alabama, that guy may now go to Auburn. He may now go to, you know, LSU. He may now, he may, I mean, I know I just named two SEC teams, but like maybe he goes maybe he goes to Florida State and now there's another ACC team that's, you know, in the mix. So that's,
or even, really, or, you know, Texas or Texas Tech or, you know, I mean, Wisconsin, just think of those teams that have been, you know, good and or great, but not elite and not to that level. And yeah.
Yeah, so you have conference championship weekend means more. You're going to have more big ticket matchups in the college football playoff on that same stage. I mean, Cincinnati, Georgia, which we did see in a bowl game anyway, but you would have seen that be for a lot more, you know, obviously a lot bigger stakes. Florida versus Alabama, or Florida versus Iowa State, excuse me. And then the second round, you would have gotten Clemson, Florida potentially. That would have been cool. Texas A&M, Notre Dame in the second round, which would have been cool. And it sets the stage for a more diverse Final Four. So, and not necessarily, you know, because, I mean, I did the exercise real quick, and then I was like, wait, these are still some of the same teams that we're used to. But as far as, like, lower seeds. So, like, for instance, last, you know, the Final Four last year was Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State. But I can see from some of those lower seeding matchups, you could have easily had Alabama, the winner of Clemson, Florida, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. And so those are, like, could potentially be three completely different teams from what we saw the committee, you know, actually select last year. So I think ultimately, to kind of wrap a bow around what I like about this 12-team format is the fact that, like, it kind of, it saves the college football playoff committee from themselves, because they have now gotten so used to just, hey, these are the only teams that matter to us. And so if you're not those teams, you can show yourself out. It now means that, like, okay, you can still have your teams that you so desperately want to include, but now other teams can get a chance. And now recruiting, I think, will become more even, a little bit more spread out, and you won't see just Alabama, just Clemson dominating the whole landscape.
Yeah, I'll just start off by saying, yeah, you hit the nail on the head with pretty much every point of all the reasons that there are to like this thing. And I don't mean that in a way of like, here, now let me tell you why you shouldn't like it. Because really, I like it a lot. For one word, I mean, if I were to sum it up in one word, it's variety. When you're talking college football, right now, you have almost no variety, as you went into detail. You said, you know, three to the four teams have been the same since we implemented this playoff. It's crazy. And then what really kind of shows you how wildly different it is when you look at college football, you have that zero variety, like we said. When you look at college basketball, you have the complete opposite. You have like 100% variety because you have a field of 68 teams that could win it all, even though we know there's a top five that are probably going to be there. But that's what's so much fun about basketball, because in the span of that tournament, one of two things happens. Either we go all, you know, we end up getting a Final Four of all chalk, and you have that moment of disappointment, kind of, if you're not a fan of those teams, you're like, oh, well, we did all that fun weekend and everything, but we ended up with the same teams. But the point is you still had that really fun ride where you definitely had upsets and random things. And you had, you know, Florida Gulf Coast winning two games, and you'll never forget that. And you have moments in that to make it more palatable to go all chalk. Or you have a Final Four with some diversity and with some crazy teams in there. And then you're just really excited to see how it shakes out. And so that's where college football is now leaning themselves with this 12-team format, is they are, as you said, giving those opportunities to other teams. So even if we go, if we go with 12 teams and say, we still say the first time we get a 12 team bracket in 2023, 2024, say we have just what you laid out in the last year's bracket, where you've got, you know, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Indiana, Florida, Iowa State, all those kind of fun teams and the same teams that we've seen every year. If you have a 12 team tournament and you still end up with a final matchup of Alabama and Ohio State, I, as a casual fan, will still find that game much more palatable, because I'll know that, like, hey, at least Alabama had to win two games to get here. Ohio State had to beat two playoff teams to get here. And then it makes that game more fun, because you're like, well, at least they weren't just, this isn't just my typical, well, I here's my regurgitated Alabama-Ohio State game. So it feels more fun when you can at least look at an entire kind of playoff run as a whole, rather than like, oh, well, the committee picks four teams and we get three games instead of one, and yay, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, the 12 teams just gives you that so much more variety of things that could happen, that it just makes it more exciting. Even when we still get the same outcome, it's more exciting because we could have had, you know, an Indiana go to the, you know, win a game or two and end up as one of the last four standing.
Well, I mean, this year, you know, like college basketball, and I'm glad that you made that correlation, is the fact that like college basketball this year, we knew like the top two teams could have played at Christmas, because they tried to, Gonzaga and Baylor, and because of COVID, they couldn't. So we knew those were the top two teams, and those still were the teams that played for the national championship. But think about how wild the NCAA tournament was with Oral Roberts, with, you know, RIP Michael. You've got to get another shot in there, Loyola. I was like trying to think of like the other teams.
Loyola upsetting Illinois.
Yeah. So, I mean, you had still those fun matchups. I think that's what you get with this. And I think the great thing about this, because the problem with playoff expansion in other sports like going on right now, is the fact that like the fields are so oversaturated. The fact that 20 teams, I mean, I know it's professional sports, but the fact that 20 teams make, you know, the playoffs in the NBA, the fact that, excuse me, the fact that, I mean, still it's technically under half, but 14 teams out of 32 make the NFL playoffs. They want to make it to where 14 teams, or what was it, 14 or 16 that made the MLB playoffs last year. I think it was 16 teams last year.
With the expanded, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, last year it made sense because of the COVID season, but, like, this year, like, I wouldn't want it. Like, that's the problem, is that it's going, like, I think that this 12 teams doesn't oversaturate it like you kind of get with college basketball. Because I did the numbers today. I was like, if college basketball percentage-wise did a, you know, what college football is doing, so only letting, you know, four teams get in, because college football has 129 teams, college basketball has 350 teams. So if college basketball did the same thing as the college football playoff, you'd be only letting the top 10 teams in the country make the NCAA tournament every year. So, and that's basically not only doing that, but saying like, okay, so the only teams that can make it, like, only Kansas can win the Big 12. Only Duke can win the ACC. Only Michigan State can win the Big 10. If anybody else wins, well, we'll see. Only Kentucky can win the SEC. Like, that would be the same sort of thing. Like, think about how wild that would be in college basketball. Terrible. And to have the saturation of 68 teams, you'd have to broaden it to 25 for college football. And so that's why I think 12, like, because the NCAA tournament did for a while get by with 32 teams. It was 32 teams before they expanded to 34. So I think that's almost the perfect scenario, is having 12 teams, because you still get that like college. I mean, I don't know if it would become a national phenomenon like the NCAA tournament, but I know I'd fill out a bracket. I mean, I know it's not as fun. I know basketball is different in the sense that, like, literally one cast away from Ohio State can go to Akron and make them an NCAA tournament team. And that's not the same thing as what happens in football. A quarterback that gets, you know, kicked off of the Ohio State, you know, Buckeyes can go to Akron, but the Akron Zips may only go, you know, 4-7 like that. Yep. You know, that's I know that's the difference between those two sports, but I think it just makes it, you know, so like, yes, you know, year in, year out, those top teams will probably, you know, you'll still probably get three of what were originally the top four teams in there, but it's just that chance to see those other games play out.
And like you said, the other really great point you made that I wanted to piggyback off was the diversity of the talent that you would get from recruiting, is where, you know, if you have a 12 team playoff, you have all these other teams now making runs at it. You have teams like Indiana who would never get a second look, generally speaking. He would never get a second look from a five-star quarterback coming out of Texas. Like, he would have no interest in going to Indiana, because unless he had home ties there for whatever reason, he would never consider Indiana. There's, you know, even though it's in the Big Ten, they're not winning the national title. They're, you know, he's not going to get the cameras on him, blah, blah, blah. But when you start expanding it to 12 and things like that, and that's, again, what makes the basketball tournament so much fun, is think of, so again, if you were to think about, like you said, if you took basketball and shrunk it down to what football is, and you only have the top 10, just thinking of a name off the top of my head that went to a smaller school and had a fun run and everything. Think like John Morant would never have gone to Murray State, because yeah. Murray State never, ever would have even had a shot at being one of those 10 teams yeah. invited to the tournament, right, regardless of how good he is. He could put 50, he could drop 50 a night, and that team wouldn't win enough or be notable enough to make that top 10 run and then get into the tournament. But because the field is so open and the tournament is so big, Murray State just had to go, you know, win. Basically, they just had to go win their conference.
Yeah.
And then boom, and then at least for one game, all the cameras got to turn to John Morant and see what he does. And that turned him into a number two overall pick. I mean, it's an entire domino effect of things that can happen that, right. that truly matter for not just for the sport, but for the individual in these games as well.
Yeah, John Morant would have played, I think, because I think Murray State's in Louisville, so I think, or in Kentucky. So yeah, he would have ended up on Louisville or Kentucky.
Or
if
Kentucky.
He wanted, yeah, right. if he wanted to be in the NBA, because well,
and who knows if he goes to Kentucky, and no matter how good he is, maybe he's not the number one guy at a yeah. blue chip program like Kentucky. And then again, he's not a number two overall pick. He might not even be a first rounder. He might have to, you know, go undrafted or be a second rounder and scrape his way onto an NBA roster. I mean, something like that can just change the entire landscape of somebody's career, let alone all the other implications of the game and the sport itself. When you look at it under a microscope for one person, what it could mean, it matters. All of this stuff matters to these guys, because at the end of the day, we're talking about college athletes who are trying to go to the next level. We aren't talking about pro guys who, I don't want to say like are just fine getting by and making their money, but like you're not talking about pro guys who are at least getting compensated with millions and millions of dollars and have the cameras regardless and have the endorsements regardless of how good their team does. No, this is their tryouts. College is their auditions and their tryouts. And if you're not in the right situation or you don't have the cameras on you, your opportunity can go by the wayside and to no fault of your own.
Right. So let's go ahead and get into hot or cold here, where basically we give a take. It's going to only be one question. So we're going to give this take and say whether or not it's a hot take or a cold take. And that is the 12-team format as it's currently presented. So as you know, the layout we just described, six conference champions, six at larges, is the best playoff for college football. And so I wanted to go like, I always hate being like, oh, this is the best ever. This is the worst ever. So I like kind of shied away from being like, it's the best case forever. College football should put this implement this and never change it. But low key, that's kind of how I feel, because, you know, honestly, you know, I've been, you know, because it's a hot take for me. I have been a big 16 team bracket playoff format guy. Just for the simple fact that it includes all the conference champions and you still get five at larges. But, you know, I will sacrifice the symmetry of, you know, every team plays the same amount of games and every conference champion gets in. Cause like, you know what? It would have been really cool to see like also at the end of the day, do I want to see Ball State go up against, you know, Clemson and get beat in the first round by, you know, 50 points? Not really. I mean, it'd be cool for them to get that national exposure. And sometimes that's all it takes. I mean, look at Northern Illinois against Florida State in the BCS. Yep. But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, like, I like how balanced it is from like, it's got stuff for, you know, of course, those, you know, guys on Twitter that are going to be like, this is a disgrace to the game. And then it's got a lot for those guys who are like, no, it clearly needs to be changed. And these are good changes because, you know, you're forcing teams and conferences to still be relevant to get in, because I'm looking at you, Pac-12, you know, but also I don't have no doubt that the Pac-12 and other schools that we remember being prominent will once again rise to the occasion, because I mean, now conversations are different. I mean, you mentioned the fact that like, you know, changes recruiting, I mean, look at North Carolina, which is kind of in college football is kind of still like a middling, you know, they were ranked this season. They've got a pretty solid quarterback who's being talked about getting drafted next season. And they had some guys getting drafted who got drafted this year. Just think about how that recruiting changes when literally like last year or 2 years ago, I guess, because Notre Dame was technically in the ACC this year, where you were like, yeah, we're like literally coaches in the ACC were saying, yeah, you know what? you know, we just kind of, everybody else is pretty much even. And then you got Clemson. Like, we just kind of play our game and Clemson is Clemson, whatever. Like, you actually have that argument where you can tell a recruit, hey, pick North Carolina over Clemson, because not only will you get more playing time, but we're building a team that can possibly get you to the college football playoff, either as an at-large or as a conference champion. I mean, that is huge. To change that argument for some of those people. Or, hey, you know what? Clemson, you know, you weren't going to play a lick of downs at Clemson, but hey, come to South Carolina that hasn't been relevant in years and come play for the Gamecocks, start every season, you know, elevate yourself. And hey, maybe you get in as an at-large because you're still in the SEC, or maybe you go to, you know, West Virginia and, you know, elevate that program and contend in the Big 12. Or maybe you go, you know, to try to think of a school, you know, that's closer.
I mean, maybe not down there, but I think of Wisconsin as that prototypical, like, team that just gets – the team that's really, 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 really good but always gets overlooked and is never really considered, you know, for that four-team playoff.
Right. Well, think regardless about how good Penn State and Wisconsin both were that year that they played in the Big Ten Championship, and neither of them got into the playoff. So, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so, like, you can spin a recruiting to that and be like, hey, you might be the guy that is that final piece. And, again, even if not, it's so important to realize that, like, just having that conversation of like, hey, now with 12 teams, we have a chance. It's so crucial to realize how important just that sentence really is when you're talking, again, when you're talking about the individuals and how they're trying to elevate themselves to that next level. Because even if you put it in their minds, we're like, look, again, think about like an Indiana, you know, they kind of in that same boat of like North Carolina, who like they had a really good season last year. They put together, you know, a better season than anybody thought they would. And now they're trying to build on that momentum. And, you know, you can go and be a guy that like, look, hey, you know what? Yeah, you're not going to play at all at Ohio State, but you can come be, you know, that wide receiver number one at IU and still get, you know, have a chance now to go make this 12-team playoff, where that becomes that much more realistic. And that just changes so many things. So, yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. I think it's just fantastic.
I'll wrap it up in kind of, you know, two examples here. So first of all, it's going to be kind of a cheap plug, but I mean, it's our channel, so whatever. 3C Media, we had I had a series with Ben Bousman for a while where we were going back and watching the old Big Ten championship games. There was a year where Russell Wilson, because he was at Wisconsin at the time, was facing Kirk Cousins for Michigan State. Could you imagine if the college football playoff was on the line and that game existed? That would have been absolutely – I mean, it was already nuts because, you know, winner goes to the Rose Bowl. But neither of those two teams were really in – because, I mean, I think at the time that was still, like, BCS. So, like, literally there was no chance, like, even with the college football playoff, they probably would have gotten in. So, like, you know, think about that game and then think about like if there was a playoff spot on the line, like how electric that game would be. And then the example that kind of, you know, made me like really, you know, deep dive and tweet and be like, you know, what really stinks is that, you know, the conference championship weekend doesn't matter. You know, in 2019, number 24 Virginia faced number 3 Clemson in the ACC championship. And I remember thinking, this is kind of what got, like I said, this got this line of thinking going, is I was like, you know what? Even if Virginia shocks the world and beats Clemson, they're not going to the college football playoff. They're 24th. So, I mean, and I wouldn't want them to, like, I wouldn't want them to go from 24th to fourth, but at the same time, like that kind of stinks that like, if Clemson loses, they're still in. And if Virginia beats Clemson, Virginia's like Clemson's still going and Virginia's I was like, this,
the question becomes like, what does Virginia have to gain by winning this game outside of the like, hey, will the conference, we get the conference championship and we get the trophy and the banner or whatever. But like outside of bragging rights, essentially.
Right. And like, maybe we sneak into the, like the Cotton Bowl. Like maybe that's what happens.
Yeah.
So I was like, under the current format, you know, Virginia didn't have a chance. But that same season, if you went by, you know, the six conference champions, the sixth conference champion would have been number 17, Memphis. So now all of a sudden, if Virginia at 24, I mean, if they beat Clemson, they leapfrog Memphis for sure. And all of a sudden, they are in as the ACC champion, and Clemson still gets in. So, you, like I said, you still get the best of both worlds, and the college football playoff is saved by them from, you know, from themselves by not being like, well, we're going to put in Clemson regardless, and so it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, so if you know, that would have happened that way, Virginia actually has a chance to actually make it. And not, and this isn't like a big banner of like, oh, the 24th ranked team in the country should have a chance going in, but it's still the sense of like, that's what makes it entertaining is if, you know, now Clemson is the fifth seed. Now that's a difference from playing, from getting a bye to now you have to face the 12th seed in the first round. Maybe you have to play, you know, Memphis in the first round or something. And maybe Memphis, you know, plays a team like Clemson really well because of the way their two schemes work. Like it opens up a whole lot of possibilities. So yes, hot take. I think, if this 12-team format was implemented, I think it would be the best case scenario for college football.
Here's the other thing that I just thought. So, and for, I'll play the game for hot or cold. I think it's a hot take. I think it's the current, the best currently presented format for college football. Would I love to eventually in some crazy world see like a 68 team bracket like we see in basketball? Sure. Why not? Go nuts. But yeah, I think this 12 team realistically is the best one. Dude, but I was just thinking about, think about the fact, think about potential rematches. So you talked about that Virginia Clemson game from 2019 and what could happen if Virginia wins. Think about if Virginia wins, they take Clemson's spot. Clemson still gets in. And then what if you have like a Final Four matchup of Virginia and Clemson again?
Yeah.
The storylines literally write themselves and everybody wins at that point. Right. I mean, imagine ESPN getting a week to just talk about the rematch of Virginia and Clemson from 3 weeks ago. Or again, think about it in the terms of the Big Ten. Think if Wisconsin beats Ohio State and leapfrogs them, but then Wisconsin has to play Ohio State in the first round of the 12-team bracket. And then again, ESPN gets to just flood themselves with like, we get a rematch. Or, you know, Alabama and you know, North Carolina or whoever. I mean, you just, or, you know, all these rematches that would be so much fun too, to potentially have, and you just tie into the whole thing of conference championship weekend mattering again, where like, do you imagine the sting that Clemson would have from like losing to Virginia and then getting a chance 3 weeks later to take them down again?
Yeah.
Or for Virginia to be like, hey, we just beat you, we get to go do it again. Like,
right.
It's so perfect in the world of storylines as well. It just, and you would never have that opportunity in the 14 playoff. Never.
No.
So yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think it's a hot take and I can't wait to see them implement that.
Yeah. I'm very excited as well. So like, hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. Because yeah. I'm definitely on board 100%. So the last thing we're going to touch on tonight, is going to be something that I know you guys have touched on a little bit on the MCT podcast as well. Sure. And that is the MLB foreign substance. I feel like when I say problem, it acts like it's like almost steroid era issue, but it's really not.
Right.
Today, as we're recording this podcast, Major League Baseball will begin punishing pitchers for applying foreign substances to the baseballs. If caught, pitchers will be ejected and suspended for 10 games. Larger punishment, obviously, for repeat offenders. Umpires will perform multiple checks on starting pitchers, and relievers will be checked after their outing, which I think is interesting because wouldn't you want to check them before their outing? Because I think, you know, perfect baseball, you know, Rob Manfred's America. Symbolism as far as like how he's run things with like, should we check a pitcher before they get pitched? So like, make sure that like the integrity of like a given game is still intact, or should we check them afterwards? So we're like, you could be like, well, game 7 of the World Series, I still pitched, you know, 6 no hit innings and you didn't check me until afterwards. So we still get the ring. So
got it. Like,
what are you going to do? You didn't take away the Astros. Yeah. So you can't take away ours either. Like,
Oh my God. And every pitcher, I mean, in that situation, every pitcher would be like, I'll take a 10 game suspension to win game 7 of the World Series.
Right.
Like,
right.
I will 100% be like, oh, you're going to suspend you for the first 10 games of next year.
And remember, you get paid too during those 10 games. So yeah, I'm going to get a 10 day vacation to win the World Series. All right, cool.
Oh, darn. You caught me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree, like looking at it, like something needed to be done. I've been watching a lot of like Talkin' Baseball and Job Boy Media's take on it. And I agree with their take that like, you know, this is more being done, you know, this year, so that, you know, like as quickly as it's being done, because Major League Baseball also before the season started deadened the balls. And it's been deadened. It's been talked about that they deadened the balls too much, because the pitcher, I think the pitchers were still doing what they were doing last year, but the balls weren't dead, so it didn't matter as much. And now that we've seen like 18 no hitters in the first couple months of the season and all this stuff, they're like, oh crap, we deadened the ball too much. What do? Do we make the balls a little bit better? No, let's go ahead and just punish the pitchers. And because that's the thing, like pitchers have been using foreign substances for extra grip for years. Oh, yeah. But they've been tweaking those substances with, you know, pitches or with, you know, substances that increase spin rate, which if you're not a big baseball fan, you're listening to the podcast. Basically, if they improve their spin rate, that improves the effectiveness of the pitch, which obviously makes it harder for batters to hit. And then thus, you know, gives an incredible advantage to the pitcher. So, you know, I'm interested to see how strictly it's enforced, because will umpires be more lenient when it comes to like sunscreen and rosin? Although the pitchers have been instructed not to use sunscreen for like night games, but then like, okay, are they still allowed for day games then? Right. And if they do that mixture, like, so it'll be interesting to see what they do. I agree it needed to be done, but it's just, you know, of course, kind of being handled in a not so, so great way.
Yeah, essentially, something had to be done because the numbers were just getting out of hand from not even just from a pure pitching standpoint, but from the standpoint of you could look universally across baseball this year and the spin rate of nearly every pitcher that is like that is having a career year this year, like you could see a noticeable uptick in their spin rate. And thus in the use of some foreign substance, whether it's spider tack or something crazy like that, that is used effectively to do that. So, and you know, it is kind of in a perfect Rob Manfred way of going about this of like, hey, the players actually came to me and were like, this is a problem. We need you to make a policy that we all agree to so we can enforce it universally and get back to a level playing field. Sound good? And he's like, yeah, sounds great. Here, we're going to spend 2 months on it. We're going to implement it in the middle of the season, and we're going to be as vague as possible with it and give all the powers to the umpires. What? It's horrible. It is a horrible, horrible policy in the end of the day, because what it does is, like I said, it gives all the powers to the umpires. So theoretically, if there is an umpire out there that has a grudge against a pitcher, theoretically, all he has to do is check him in between the second and third inning or whenever he decides to do it and say, you're sticky, you're out of here. And then he's done for 10 days. There's no appeal. There's no like, hey, go get a second opinion. Like, or hey, here's what I was using. This is a legal thing. There's no gray area. There's no middle ground. It's if that umpire says, nah, I've decided that's too sticky, then you're done for 10 days and you got to sit down and shut up about it. It's a way overreaction to an issue that is a legit issue and needs to be taken care of, but it's an overreaction. And also to implement it halfway through a season is just a big problem anyway. You should have spent more time on it, you know, before you implement it, and then implement it in the offseason when you're going to have CBA talks anyway. I mean, like, again, it's just such a perfect Rob Manfred way to handle it, because, you know, he's botched all of baseball and called the World Series trophy a hunk of metal. So, yeah. I mean, he clearly doesn't care about the game or even the players to the point where he's like, you want a policy? Fine. You want me to do something? Fine. Here, done. And it's, you know, it's not a very clear rule, and you got players that are just now asking for clarification. They're like, okay, here's this policy. I read it. I understand. I've read it. I don't understand it. I need some clarification. And there's nothing back to them. There is no extra clarification. So they need to, I mean, it's a brand new policy that's being implemented today as of today on Monday that already needs to be reviewed and readjusted. And so it's just bad. And then you've got guys, I mean, you have a guy like Trevor Bauer, who is as outspoken as anybody, but he's also a huge star. So you can't really silence him and shut him up. He's a huge star. He's the reigning National League Cy Young winner. And he just went to one of the biggest markets in baseball in LA. So yeah, he absolutely isn't going to be quiet. And he hasn't been. I don't know if you saw his 20-second Twitter video of like, let's play a game. Is this legal or illegal? And he literally had a baseball attached to his palm like this. And he was like, and the baseball was stuck to him. And he's like, yep, this is a baseball stuck. And then he pulled it and everything. And he's like, all this was sweat and rosin. I took my hands through my hair to get as much sweat as I had, rubbed the rosin and did this, stuck the baseball and it stuck. Is that illegal or is that legal? Because those are two legal things that, you know, that you've given me the rosin right. back. I've got sweat. Like, you can't make me not sweat in June and July. I'm sorry.
Right.
So, you know. And then all it's going to take, again, he was like, all it takes is an umpire to be like, that's illegal, and I'm done for 10 days, and I missed two starts. And think about, when you're talking about a pitcher of that caliber, think about what two starts means. Two starts are two games that, if you know, if the Dodgers lose those two games and end up at the end of the year losing the division by half a game, one of the things they can look back on is, oh, well, it would have been nice to have Bauer for those two starts that we expected him to. You know, so it's a policy that needs to be there, but it needs to be already kind of revised and just more clear, because the difference between there's an important difference between pitchers needing a substance to get grip on the ball than pitchers getting substances to add spin rate. And even Tyler Glasnow talked about it after he got hurt. He was like, look, I've pitched 80 innings already this year, and now you told me to change everything, and now I hurt my UCL. And he's like, I completely believe that losing, you know, this policy is directly contributed to my injury, because he had to, quote, grip the bleep out of the ball now because he didn't have whatever substance he was using, because he was afraid that it would be categorized as a sticky foreign substance and he would get ejected for 10 and lose 10 games. So, you know, you already have pitchers not happy with it. Players aren't happy with it. And it was implemented today. And we saw it already. Jacob DeGrom was the first one to get checked. And after the top of the first inning, where the first three pitches of the game, by the way, were 300 mile an hour fastballs to Ronald Acuna, and he struck him out on three pitches. So like, he looks fine. He's still DeGrom. And then after that inning, before he got to the lock, to the dugout, the umpires came out, stopped him and checked him for foreign substances. So they took his glove, checked his whole glove, took his hat and made him kind of like, even it was weird from the angle I saw, made him like, not necessarily undo his belt buckle, but like kind of flip his belt buckle out and shake his like jersey or whatever. I don't know.
Which I'm sorry. Then, I've not seen a pitcher touch his belt buckle like, and be like, I've never seen, cause like you see on Twitter, like before this was really like so blown up, like you would see like occasionally a thing on Twitter that would be like, oh, look, here's the back of Gerrit Cole's neck. It looks really shiny for some reason. Or be like, oh, look at his hat. It looks a little unnatural. Yep. Like that's what you would see. Like is the hand, the arm, the hat, or the glove. That's the main like three areas. I've never seen like, uh-oh, did you see the belt buckle that Jacob has? It looks a little suspicious. Like I've never seen that.
And I mean, it's not even like, I'm trying to think of two, like back pocket would work because you could do that smoothly, but back pocket, if you do that every single pitch to get something out of it, that's gonna be super obvious. Like that's not a natural, you don't naturally just like rub your butt every between each pitch. I don't know.
Yourself. Yeah.
Sorry. At least I don't. I can't say that I do. But it was a wild thing to watch Jacob DeGrom get checked, because he was just standing there just kind of chuckling at the whole thing. Like, all right. Yeah. Here you go. Okay. And then to even look at it in a different light, like we were talking before we started recording, you know, MLB for the last few years has done everything they've done in name of speeding up the game and increasing the pace of play. And now they've taken an active step into slowing the game down and being like, nope, stop everything. He just struck out the side on nine pitches. There's no way he could have naturally done that. Let me go in. Let me just use my magical umpire eyes and take care of this. I mean, it's kind of crazy. And like I said, it's just, you're putting yourself again in a situation for something bad to happen, for something controversial to come out of this. For all it's going to take is, like I said, that one umpire that's got a personal grudge. Because, I mean, and even something as simple as, like, you know, if a team's manager is barking at the home plate umpire all game for the first five innings, he's just arguing about the zone, but he's not doing enough to get himself ejected. He's just kind of on the edge of the dugout, like bad, you know, whatever, just doing enough to kind of aggravate the umpire. Wrong, bad call, wrong. You know, just for five innings, and it finally bugs the umpire, and the umpire gets that maniacal thought of like, oh, well, instead of throwing the umpire or the manager out, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to check this pitcher and I'm going to hurt you that way. Like, that's all it's going to take for this to be a problem. You're just setting yourself up to fail with the way this policy is right now.
See, and that's the biggest thing to me. The thing is, too, is that I was like, I don't know that it will really be used for, like, vengeance. But then I forgot that, like, Joe West exists. And so,
I mean, you got the Angel Hernandezes out there. And right. I mean, you've got these guys that you've got. I mean, you got to think about in the sense of how quick some of these umps throw players out and managers out for arguing balls and strikes or arguing anything. I mean, Joey Votto, the most likable dude, like, in all of baseball, really. Got thrown out in the first inning of a game 2 days ago because he argued a check swing to the third base umpire. And really all he was is like, I didn't swing. That was a bad call. I didn't swing. And the ump threw him out. So like, absolutely, this thing is going to be used. You're really testing the waters here of how well the umpires are going to, you know, hold themselves accountable to not use it for vengeance.
Well, think about a guy like John Lester or John Lackey. I know John Lackey doesn't pitch anymore, but like guys that really bark at Madison Bumgarner, guys that really bark at the, you know, the umpire. I could definitely see it more that way. Well, and the thing is too, and kind of the last thing I'll really say on it is the fact that like, I'm interested to see how closely MLB could come to this, because this seems like a perfect scenario. Like, so I think, obviously, this is going to be and should be discussed in the offseason through the CBA. Because I know, you know, rosin hasn't really been, you know, a thing. Like, not, I mean, it's used, but it's not like, obviously, they're using other substances for grips. We've seen for just normal grip, not necessarily to improve spin rate, like rosin, sunscreen. Yep. I could see them like agreeing, like, this is a substance that is that is going to be at the mound or in each dugout. You know, and this is what you can use. It's determined as legal. You know, you have a trainer that, you know, and maybe like a person from MLB, like watch you apply it to your arm. And so there you go. That's the substance you can use for grip. And that's the end of it. So that would be the start of it. And then just have players submit their hats and gloves at the beginning, like before every game, and then resubmit them afterwards. Like, why, like, what is the, because I'm with you, like, because first of all, there's your two problems, like, with doing it during the game, is the fact that you're doing it, which actively slows the pace of play, like you said, and then what I was saying earlier, we're like, okay, so you're going to check it after he's already done something, which means that, like, the game has already been altered, which is ultimately what you're trying to prevent.
Trying to avoid.
Yeah. So then really, it doesn't really, I guess you're preventing it for the future, but it would be it'd be like, you know, I don't even know where like another application, like in another sport would be, but it feels like, you know, when the NFL gets a call wrong in the playoffs and they come out and say they got the call wrong the next day, it's like, well, you're still going to count it as a loss.
Well,
right?
What does
it really do? If they were to do something where they're like, all right, we're going to come up with a substance that you're allowed to use that's going to be that you can use for grip. And then we're also like, we want you to submit your hats and gloves before every, like, the foreign substance can only be applied to your arm. And then the hats and gloves are submitted. They have to be completely clean. Now, I know how you could still misconstrue that because, well, what if it's sticky because you touched the substance and then your hand and then the glove? Like, all right. Well, you know, within reason, I think, you know, as long as it doesn't appear like the glove itself or the hat itself was tampered with, like, I think that's where it needs to be, like, agreed upon. Like, okay, we're using this league approved substance that everyone's allowed to use anyway, that's used for not really performance enhancing, but more for just extra grip. And then some of that substance got on the hat or glove, but there's no traces of like spider tack. Like that would be like that would be much more concrete. So it'll be fun to see how close MLB will actually get to that, because we know it won't be completely that scenario, because that would just be too, that would make too much sense for for that to be the case.
Yeah, exactly. And let me ask you one final thing about this, because I was just thinking about it. So in the context of an actual baseball game, so say the scenario comes up, your starting pitcher gets through five innings and he's looking good. So you don't have anybody warming up in the bullpen because it's Kershaw, whatever, and he's looking dominant. Or say it's DeGrom, and five innings, if you're the manager, you're still sleeping. You're not even thinking about the bullpen at this point. And then he pitches the top of the fifth, gets checked for a foreign substance, gets thrown out right there in the going into the bottom of the fifth. I mean, I guess actually at that point, yeah, okay, you've got the bottom half of the inning to get somebody warmed up. Well, okay, so rule, that kind of answers my own question. So like my point was like, what do you do if, again, you're talking pace of play, what do you do if you check somebody right as they're about to start pitching maybe, and then you pull them, and then all of a sudden now you have to get a cold guy up and get going?
So you already have that situation kind of happening in games anyway, when you see like players pitchers throwing at people and then getting ejected. Yeah. So I think, or getting hurt even. So I think that's how it would be looked at, because if a player gets hurt, you have like unlimited amount of pitches to get a player warm. So I think that's how that would be treated. So if you eject, you know, if it's, you know, well, yeah, cause you, like you said, you still do have the half inning. So that's where like, it doesn't really apply fully, but like, let's say like it's in the middle of an inning and an umpire is like, wait, you're going to your arm a lot. Like that's where that would apply.
Sure. Okay.
Where like, I think if you toss them, then you'd be like, all right, whoever you're bringing out of the bullpen, well, for one, we're checking them, but for two, we're going to wait until he's like, tells us, hey, I'm ready to go. We're not going to be like, all right, it's not going to be like, hopefully it wouldn't be like MLB The Show where you're like, okay, your guy gets tossed and your guy who's not warm has eight pitches. Hopefully he's warm by then. Like, hopefully it's not going to be like that.
Imagine bringing in the bullpen guy. You throw a guy out and you bring in the bullpen guy and they don't even bother to check him. And he's just got way more.
Oh my God. He actually is like sopping wet in spider tack. Like he is a spider.
He lifts up his arms and he just has like spider webs stack right here, from so much spider tack, it's just stuck to like his underarms.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. He's just like, I'm ready.
They're like, no, that's fine. That's fine. But I saw that gleam of sweat from DeGrom. So I had to get him out of here.
Until after the inning, but we're watching.
Yeah. Just know you better get these two outs, man, because you're on thin ice.
You're out of here. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's the right idea, poor execution for this policy right now.
Rob Manfred's tenure. Like could a commissioner be more hated in the sport than Roger Goodell in the NFL? Well,
I think you got your answer.
Rob Manfred. Answer.
That's the name of his autobiographical book, like that'll come out about his tenure. Right idea, poor execution. Right. The story of Rob Manfred.
pretty much. Well, the quote I like to like think about my mind and go back to is after Madison Bumgarner's no hitter, he thinks. Well, I mean, I count it as a no hitter. I know in baseball it's not counted, but
we talked about that too.
So. Right, exactly. Madison Bumgarner was like, I'd like to thank Rob Manfred for these seven inning games, and I'd like to thank the Shadows, which really helped a lot. John Boy Media, they have a weekly segment, what's called Weekly Dumb, and they talked about the no hitter. John Boy was like, you think Rob Manfred like shed like one single tear because like he actually got like genuinely thanked by an active MLB player? Like, you think he was just like, hey, appreciate me? Like, do you think
this is what this feels like? Oh my God.
Appreciation? What? So yeah,
that's
incredible.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, I mean, I just hope because I remember them bringing that up like a few years ago, or maybe it was last year, something like that, where they're like rosin and suns, like rosin itself isn't doing it anymore. We need more grip. And so if they can agree on that and then do the whole like other thing, like They can. There's a way to do it. I just hope we'll see how close they could actually get.
And
to
I
that.
Think, and I think that might be the most frustrating part of this is that like everybody can kind of be like everybody can kind of seem to agree that like there is a way to do this, and then the powers that be are just like, yeah, but we're gonna do it this way, and like right. No, that's the most frustrating part about it is it's not like pass interference in the NFL where like, dude, there inherently is just no clear cut like. Right yeah. answer because we just see so many weird things, you know, from case right. to case, play to play, that like it's just damn near impossible to come up with one solid here it is and it works every time where everybody can agree on it both sides. But like this seems like an issue that everybody can come to agreement on if we spent the time and did the research and actually put the work in. And then for the, like I said, the powers to be to just be like, yeah, but that's going to take money and time. We're just going to come up with this. And like, and it's just so frustrating in that sense too. It's just baffling to the mind to be like, why can't you just do the work and get it right? Yeah, and everybody will win. Like that's like, they'll win. Everybody will win. If they get it right, that's one less thing people will bitch about Rob Manfred for. And he just doesn't seem to care. And the rest of the powers that be just don't.
That's the debate and that's the race now. What will happen first? Rob Manfred will be able to roll out policy that actually like makes sense and is good, like relatively from the get-go, or will the NFL define a catch? That will be the argument going forward, which will happen first. So it'll be interesting to see between those two things what happens first. But I think that'll do it for this week's edition of the Crash Course Podcast. Thank everyone for listening. Remember, you can like us on Facebook, Crash Course Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Crash Course FM. You can go to our YouTube channel, 3C Media, where you can catch Chris. We'll point the right direction this time. You can catch Chris as well as Michael and Todd A every week on the MCT Podcast. That's our YouTube exclusive podcast. So not only can you watch the version of this we Mojo in the background, he wants to get his two cents in on MLB foreign substances, and then you've got you've got all that content on the 3C Media YouTube channel, so make sure you go ahead and head over there, like and subscribe. We really appreciate it. Also remember, you can catch us live every week, twitch.tv/3cmedia. I remember you can follow us and hear us every week on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Podcast. Chris, where can they find you?
So you can find me. I got it right here on the screen at Mr. Topher 92 on Twitter.
It's not on the screen. There we go. Now it's on the screen.
I was like, it should be on the screen. It's on my screen.
As long as
my screen.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can find me there. And then, yeah, like Craig said, you can find, my podcast, our podcast, the MCT podcast on 3C Media.
He said his podcast, guys. It is mine.
This guy. I was going to say, haven't missed an episode. That's why. But I actually did miss one after my second COVID shot. I was like, nope. See, I'm dead to the world today. So you guys can either do it a day later or do it without me. And those sons of did it without me. They called my bluff. I was like, oh,
they're
okay.
Like, all right. They're like,
I see how it is then. yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. But yeah, I'm most active there on Twitter. So you can find me there, and then every week on part of 3C Media.
All right. Well, again, Chris, thank you for filling in. Great to have you here. Again, you can check out the MCT podcast every week. That'll do it for this week's edition of the podcast. I will admit I have not committed on whether or not we will do a show next week because we're still waiting, of course, for B. Scott to get back. We will be back at most. B. Scott will be back in 2 weeks and we'll do our next podcast then. We're basically going to go, for a little peek behind the curtain. If something big happens between now and next Monday, we will most likely have at least a little bit of an iteration of the show. But if it still kind of stands pat, because the Western Conference Finals or Eastern Conference Finals, I don't think either of those will be done by next week, by next Monday. So they could be if they're both sweeps.
Unless my sons pull off the sweep.
Yeah, I'm excited. That was another thing real quick that I was going to bring up with the college football conversation, that like hopefully this proves that like he doesn't have to be the same generic teams like rolled out. Like literally this, you know, this Final Four and the NBA is Milwaukee. I mean, yeah, you still got LA, but you have Phoenix and you have, you know, Atlanta, which are like all of those are not big market, like where you would go to. You know, LeBron's not going to the Hawks anytime soon. LeBron's not going to the Bucks anytime soon. You know, the next super team isn't happening in Phoenix, but yet that, you know, oh, look, those markets are small markets, but yet you can still be successful, which hopefully that kind of helps even out the NBA a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fun thing about this Final Four, the last thing I'll say, is that none of these four teams have won an NBA championship since the NBA and ABA merger in the 70s. So you're going to get essentially a new championship. And I even saw a picture yesterday that was really fun. That was like one of these four players is about to win their first ring. So Devin Booker, Trae Young, Paul George, or Giannis are going to win their first ring. And you know what? At the end of the day, that's awesome. That's I would rather see that than LeBron get his fifth. Like, I just would. So yeah, it's going to be a fun ride the rest of the way for sure.
Yeah, so thank you guys all for tuning in. We will see you, if not next week, in 2 weeks. And until then, have a good one, everybody.